Today is World AIDS Day, which brings renewed warnings about the spread of the disease. Worldwide, an estimated 39.4 million people are living with HIV, the majority in sub-Saharan Africa. Sometimes one individual story pierces through those overwhelming numbers and makes a difference. A South African boy named Nkosi Johnson certainly did that. Infected in the womb, sickly from birth, Nkosi challenged his government for the right to attend school. Then he challenged world leaders at the International AIDS Conference in Durban.
We are human beings. We can walk, we can talk, just like everyone else. We are all the same.
Jim Wooten, an ABC News senior correspondent, covered Nkosi Johnson's story for Nightline and now has written a book. It's called We Are All the Same, a story of a boy's courage and a mother's love. It chronicles the life and triumphs of the frail Nkosi.
He was so tiny. His pants were always dragging the ground, and they could never get a baseball cap. He liked to wear a Chicago Bulls baseball cap, but they could never find one small enough to, even with the adjustable strap in back, so it always sort of hung down around his ears, and his sweaters were always too big, and that sort of accentuated how small he was. But there still was about this kid a kind of a size that did not match his physique. He was a very large person. There was such joy about him that it was contagious.
What is his backstory? Where did he come from?
He was born in what used to be called Zululand, which is now KwaZulu-Natal, which is a province of South Africa. And it is the place that has been hammered hardest by the HIV virus. And that's where Nkosi was born, into a family that had known nothing for generations, just abject rural poverty, in which the goals for any one day were simply finding food and finding firewood to cook it on and a place to sleep that night.
His mother, Daphne, had one other child, but she decided to give Nkosi up. Why did she do that?
She left KwaZulu-Natal and came to Johannesburg because the boy was pretty sick and she wasn't feeling well herself because she'd been infected by Nkosi's father, whomever that may be. I never found out and she never said. So she heard from her doctor that there was a place in Johannesburg that took care of people with AIDS. And it turned out that it was a place for gay white men. And she took her little boy there and they took him in. And even though he was 2 years old, he was already a rock star. He became the darling of the hospice, which then had to close because of financial difficulties. And one of the people on the board was a white middle-class woman named Gail Johnson, who said, "We have no place to put this little boy, so he's coming home with me." And she made an arrangement with Daphne, the biological mother, who said, "That's fine. That's better than I can do." And that's how he came to be Nkosi Johnson.
At the time you met him, I believe he was, at least as far as you knew, the longest surviving child with AIDS in South Africa. There's this scene in the book where you describe an interview with him, and you could tell that he was losing steam, that he was getting tired, and you tried to cut the interview off. And he said, no, you haven't asked me about death yet.
That's really sort of a quintessential Nkosi moment. This was the first time he'd been on an American network. I think he just wanted to make certain that everything in the interview was exactly as he wanted it to be. He was, this was not a rookie. But so I said to him, okay, that's it, at the end of the interview. And he said, no, wait just a moment, Jim. You haven't asked me about death. I just sat there and listened for the next 3 or 4 minutes as he said things like, "I'm not afraid of dying. I don't want to die, but I'm not afraid of dying. And the thing I want to do before I die is," and then he offered this mantra, which has stuck with me through everything since then, "do all you can with what you have in the time you have in the place you are." And I just said, my goodness, this is an 11-year-old boy with not much time left, and this is what he says? Wow.
You go back and you say goodbye to him. If you wouldn't mind reading from that.
I tried to steel myself against what I had assumed would be his appearance, but nothing, I think, could have prepared me for what had happened to him. He was lying beneath a blanket with both arms exposed. Even through the long sleeves of his pajamas, the outline of his bones was visible. There was no more flesh to hide them. I was looking at a skeleton. Under the blanket there was almost nothing to suggest the presence of a human body of any size, just a small mound no larger than one of his stuffed animals. Suddenly it struck me that little by little Inkosi was simply disappearing, that one day soon Gail would come into the bedroom to say good morning and discover that her darling boy had simply vanished. I nodded to the nurse seated on a stool by the bed, walked to the other side, and stretched myself out next to him. Although he was alive, there was no visible sign of it, no movement of respiration from the small lump beneath the covers. I touched his hand. It seemed to me to be the hand of a newborn baby, then wrapped it in mine. There was not the slightest indication of a pulse. I propped my head on an elbow and watched him for a while, then released his hand and lay flat for a few moments, staring at the ceiling, remembering the boy he had been, the boy with the giggles, the boy with all the laughter, the mischievous boy with the light in his eyes, the boy with that marvelous, magnificent grin. And in those moments of remembering with that boy on the screen of my mind, I found at least a small shred of comfort. I raised myself, leaned across, and kissed his forehead. "So long, champ," I said. At the door, I turned for what I knew was one last look, and somehow I managed not to cry until I was on the plane that night.
The crisis, the struggle, continues in South Africa, throughout Africa, actually. What is Inkosi Johnson's legacy?
I think it's simply stated in the title of this book, We Are All the Same. What he tried to say with his life and with his words and by example was that people who are living with AIDS and living with the HIV virus are entitled to be treated like other people. Now, the problem in Africa is that that is not the case. They're treated as outcasts, as pariahs, as the new lepers of the new millennium. And as a consequence, even if there is treatment available, they don't get it. Now, what Inkosi was able to do is like spitting in the ocean, because the rate of infection across Africa continues to climb, except in two countries, Uganda and Senegal. And for Inkosi to live the kind of life he lived and to present the kind of example and challenge that he did won't make much difference at all, unless and until the leadership, the political leadership in Africa and in the Western world decides that something has to be done. And until then, it doesn't really make any difference what anyone does, except, as Inkosi said, do all you can in the time you have, with what you have in the place you are.
Jim, thanks for coming in to talk to us.
And thank you for inviting me, Michelle.
Jim Wooten's book is titled We Are All the Same. Pictures of Inkosi Johnson and information about the hospice in Inkosi's Haven are at our website, npr.org.